Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the ninth week's Truth of Happiness course Dhamma study on karma and rebirth. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on February 13th, 2016. So, karma and rebirth. Let me read a little bit and then we'll talk about it. If there any question comes up while I'm reading it, just holler out a little bit, please. So these are the Buddha's words, and there's a lot of them, but this is one particular saying. I am the owner of my actions, the heir to my actions. I am born of my actions and related through my actions. My actions will determine the fortune or misfortune in my life. So karma and rebirth are closely linked concepts of the Buddha's teachings. Despite modern presentations that the Buddha taught karma and rebirth only to relate to the prevalent beliefs of his time and are not useful or relevant teachings, understanding karma and rebirth is essential to these teachings. The reason why I say that is most of the modern and later developed schools either have a misunderstanding and misapplication of karma and rebirth, or they say, and a lot of the modern so-called scholars say, well, the Buddha only mentioned karma and rebirth because it was a common belief at the time. Well, that goes against everything the Buddha taught, because most of what he taught went against the common beliefs of his time. He taught it because it's an essential understanding. The Buddha's teaching on karma and rebirth refuted many of the common beliefs of his time and helped clarify the purpose and experience of awakening. Understanding these teachings as they were originally presented and in the context of the Four Noble Truths brings insight and clarity to the Eightfold Path and can help one recognize contradictory and confusing Buddhist teachings that are later developed adaptations and accommodations to his original teachings. Karma and rebirth are conditions arising from ignorance. Karma and rebirth arise from a lack of understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Karma means action. Karma is in no way punishment as a result of arbitrary judgments from a supreme being, and karma is not the consequences from a vague, independent moral and ethical spiritual system. So we are, as in everything that we experience in our life, we are in complete control of the experience of our lives. So karma unfolding is not punishment. It's not something that we don't have any control over. It's not a predetermined existence. Remember, if everything is in a constant flux, nothing can be predetermined. We can moderate the unfolding of our karma, and I'll get to that in just a second. Karma should not be viewed simply as what is unfolding in your life. Karma is the present unfolding of past intentional actions moderated by your present state of understanding and quality of mindfulness. As your present state of mindfulness and understanding animate your current actions are moderating the effects of past actions. Does that make sense to anybody? There you go. What I mean is that everything that's occurring in our lives right in this instant, right in this room, is an unfolding of our past intentional actions, even the intention to come here this morning. Or we wouldn't be having this experience right now if we didn't first have that intention. But moderated by the present state of our mindfulness. So if we came here this morning with the intention to come to this class and be disruptive, we're going to be creating an agitated mind state, and we'll be missing what's occurring, or at least we won't have the same experience as others would. We won't be creating understanding. We'll have moderated that because of the intention that we had. But our intention is to develop mindfully the Eightfold Path. We come here with that intention, and that's what we experience. Karma is the present unfolding of past intentional actions moderated by the present state of our mindfulness. If our mindfulness is inclined towards awakening, whatever is occurring unsettling day, if our mindfulness is towards awakening, we see it clearly, and we keep going in that direction towards awakening. If we don't have a framework to see things, if we're not well concentrated, if our mindfulness is inclined towards continuing clinging views, that's where we'll go. That's where our karma will take us. So karma, each moment has the potential to create an action towards awakening or an action towards continued confusion and delusion. That's the important teaching of karma and rebirth. Each moment has the potential, as Kevin was saying, to give birth towards refined mindfulness and continued awakening, or continued delusion and more disappointing and suffering. Each and every moment. And it has to do also with the point of view that we're holding. And it has to do with that right view, the view of developing understanding, and holding the strong intention to recognize and abandon clinging and craving. That leads directly to the moral and ethical aspects, and that's where it can get tricky, and that's where we think that karma is just punishment for bad actions. But in part, in the context of the Eightfold Path, karma is simply what's occurring. Another way to describe karma is anatta. If you want to know your karma, look at what's going on in your life and how you feel about it. What's your experience of your life right now? So each moment, we can change the experience of karma from being unpleasant and maybe suffocating or confining to one of great freedom and relief, because we know we're headed in the right direction no matter what our karma is. Karma does not predetermine anything. It's the present state of our mindfulness that moderates what's occurring right now. Is that clear? That's kind of the essence of the Dhamma. And it goes back to approval and acceptance. We don't have to approve of what's occurring in our lives right now. We could be having an awful experience. But we accept it simply as what's occurring. It's not punishment. It's what's occurring right now. The same is true for something that might be exhilarating, but we don't attach ourselves to it, because it's simply what's occurring right now. So a couple of hands went up. Eva?
Joyful about the thing that we're practicing is the fact that there is the possibility to control at this very moment, so that even what has happened before doesn't have to affect what's going to happen, or rather does, but I can stop it here.
Yeah.
And so that the way that I'm kind of looking at it is like my upbringing and so on, I can... I have a lot of negatives about, you know, this happened and that happened and I'm upset and whatever. And I don't want to stay there, stuck and repeating the same cycle, because I can't break out of it. I can break out of it right here, right now, by saying, no, I don't have to be whatever creation my mind made up. I can stop it right here, and therefore I don't have to see it there anymore, and it's just so wonderful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That word control, people get pretty excited about using that word, but that's exactly, we're gaining control. That's what mindfulness is. True mindfulness is gaining control of the way we think and what we think about. The Buddha was the world's greatest thinker because he understood how to think, but also what to think, what to hold in mind. That's the essence of mindfulness. Each and every moment we can hold in mind that which is going to deliver freedom and lasting peace and happiness, or we can disregard what we now know and continue delusion and suffering. That's the essence of rebirth also. It's the essence of karma and rebirth. What's occurring right now, and what is the state of my mindfulness? Ellie?
I didn't have my
hand up. Ah, sorry. Well, Jen, yeah. Ladies first.
I understand everything, but I feel like the last two or three sentences of what you read confused me, because I felt like it was saying present state of mindfulness changes the past. That confused me or something about.
Let me read it. I think this is it.
Yeah.
As your present state of mindfulness and understanding animate your current actions are moderating the effects of past actions. The unfolding.
The effects of past actions. Okay, that was the part of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, even the past, the Buddha described the phenomenal world in a few different ways. One of the ways that the word that's used is samsara. That just means wandering around in a deluded, confused existence. And some people will say, well, life is just an illusion. And the Buddha said, it's not that. Life is like an illusion, but it's not an illusion. It seems like that because of the ever-changing nature. Even looking back on the past, looking back on a memory, I can never see it clearly because I'm seeing it through my own filters. If Anthony was here, he would talk about that as a lawyer. You can have something happen. Somebody, 10 people can observe an accident, and their 10 people are going to describe it completely differently based on their own points of view. We do the same thing with memories that we have. We see things differently. Something that might have gotten us mildly upset when I was 10 years old, because I've been building on it for 50 years, I'm now in a rage over something that was insignificant. And none of it is based on any reality. Getting back to today's teaching, looking at life, as we develop an ability to simply and dispassionately watch our lives as life unfolds, then we gain the mindful ability to not react to things, but respond to them. We gain the ability to accept what is occurring without the need to approve it. And that need to approve it comes from an ego personality. Again, karma and rebirth is not something that's taught out of the context of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. It's an aspect of it. It helps us develop understanding when we see it clearly. And we are in complete control of our karma moment by moment as it unfolds. And that relates to a present state of our mindfulness, which is what that... Kevin.
Yeah, what you said really... I'm really feeling the part when it says past intentional actions, and the rest is really important, but I kind of really focus on that, because prior to engaging in a Dhamma study, if all of my intentional actions were rooted in ignorance of the Four Noble Truths and without right intention, things come back into your life, past intentional actions, even though I didn't intend to, that you notice now when you have a mindfulness and you see people or events or things come back into your life that was a past action. And it's like, I'm not trying to get into the time loop thing, but it's here. It's because of the intention I had in wrong view without the intention to abandon clinging and craving, it's now here again. And I've got this present concentration to view it.
Yeah.
It sort of ties into, again, the dependent origination. If it's a moment birthed in ignorance, then... there's sort of that birth and death thing with dependent origination. You can see the death of an ignorant moment towards wisdom, or the birth of an ignorant moment towards wisdom, and it kind of is going like this to me. And it's like, it's here, and it's right here. It's someone or something came back into my life or is in my life from something I have intended not meaningfully to be ignorant or without right intention, but now here it is, and I can view it mindfully, and if it's going towards my path of awakening or not, then it's either going to stay or it's not. I'm going to eliminate it, or it's going to come on with me. And, just that's sort of that concentration that I've developed, that is developing with all of us, I think. So I don't know if that means anything or not, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's one of the reasons why concentration is so important, so that we're not distracted by conditioned behavior and further condition our karma towards more confusion and suffering. With the developed concentration, which leads to the refined mindfulness, we can see things clearly. We can continue to incline our minds towards awakening. There's an aspect of karma that's so important to develop, and I'm getting a little bit away from what I wrote this week. There's such a thing as worldly causes and conditions, and that relates back to the First Noble Truth. Inherent in the phenomenal world is disappointing experiences and also suffering. So when a worldly causes and conditions is something like, right now we have an earthquake and the building collapses. Well, that's not my karma. That has nothing to do with anything that I've done, but I still have the experience of it. And my response or reaction to it is what's going to create karma out of it. So everything that happens to us is not a direct result of karma. It's part of living in this phenomenal world. It's prone to dukkha. What do we do with it? What's our response? What's our reaction to it? So you can't blame everything that happens. The reason why that's important is you can blame the current state of your life right now on bad karma. Well, it's not bad karma. It's part of living in the world. As you get, when the Buddha described dukkha, the first thing he said is dukkha is birth, sickness, aging, and death. It's not your karma. You didn't do something wrong as you get older and you start suffering a little bit because of those physical ailments that we all have. That's not karma, but my response to it is, and my response to a new ache this morning if it's aggravation or upset, that's just going to create an effect for the rest of my day. It's going to define my karma for today. But if it's simply an acknowledgement of this process and I don't take it personally, it will have no effect. But I'll continue to age. But what's my experience of that? And the same is true as for anything that happens to us. If I pull out of the parking lot and I get hit by somebody, somebody's driving down Bridge Street too fast, Harrison Street, that's not my karma that somebody ran into me, but my reaction to it will define my next moment. That's karma. Is that clear? Diane.
I'm saying that as more what I believe about myself. That if I believe that if someone told me when I was little that I was stupid and I never finished anything, then that might be a belief that I hold. Mm-hmm. And if I carry that into every aspect of my life, then I'm probably not going to achieve very much or think very highly of myself. But if an earthquake happened, I might think, well, I caused it because I just don't have any luck or something like that. And what I'm hearing is and what I'm experiencing is that meditation helps me to change those beliefs about, and this is part of what I was talking about, the process. I've had these concepts, these beliefs about who I am, so to speak, from childhood. And meditation is bringing up I was told that, I believed that because I respected and that person was an authority figure in my life, and I've held that all of my life. And meditation says to me, hey, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to believe that anymore. And I love the new use of the word control is I have control over what I believe and what I bring into my life by my thoughts.
Yeah, that's a great example of karma, that somebody told me when I was a little boy that I'm stupid, and so as life, and I bought into it, my mind became conditioned to being a stupid person. So even when something is offered to me that can be useful, such as a Dhamma, well, I don't understand that, I'm stupid. And so I can't engage in this path of liberation and freedom because I'm too stupid, when the truth of the matter is anybody can. But that conditioned aspect of mind that up until this point I was given no way to understand it continues to drive the experience of my life. That's karma. I have another moment of being stupid. Again, it's kind of a harsh word, but just using it, I think it's a good example. Or I can recognize that this is through the Dhamma practice, that's just conditioned thinking. That doesn't define me anymore. Yeah. Again, it's a great example of it. Each moment holds a potential to continue to refine our mindfulness towards awakening or continue towards delusion. Eva, yet?
What I have difficulty in the reading and understanding is the rebirth part.
Yeah, No, please, finish your...
I read it and then my mind just kind of shuts off because I don't understand what we're talking about when we're using the term rebirth now, because as I had understood it, it's the whole reincarnation thing, and it's the whole, I had this life, and so in the future life I'm going to be a toad because of what I did in this life, and that's not what we're reading here in your book, that's correct, right?
Yeah, but if you happen to be a toad now, you wouldn't be too worried about it, you'd be looking forward to it. There's more to the article, and I hope you read it, but what I'm going to talk about that is rebirth now. So there's all types of interpretations of what reincarnation is, depending on, what beliefs, there's all kinds of religious conclusions about reincarnation or rebirth, and there's really two different things. So the Buddha put very, very little influence on future lives, although he didn't mention them. What he taught was to understand that whatever is going to occur in the future, whether it's the next moment or some other physical existence, is determined by our actions right now. And rebirth is more applicable and more important to understand in our present life. Not so much about where we're going after we die. The reason why is that this teaching is about developing understanding and awakening and lasting peace and happiness in this life. Not one after I'm dead. The Buddha wasn't concerned at all. He was slightly concerned about where we're going to end up, but what his big concern was is to awaken and see things clearly right now. So the important teaching on rebirth is that each moment has the potential to give birth to an awakened or awakening mind, an awakening experience of life, or continued delusion. What's important about that is that brings an immediacy to our practice. There's a lot of teachings that present Buddhist teachings that it's more important to accumulate good merit so that after we die, we're not going to be born a toad. Well, if we do that, you can spend a whole lifetime doing good acts but with no real understanding behind it. And what did you achieve? Nothing. Except, I mean, you lived a moral life, but you didn't develop any type of understanding of what's occurring. And you're continually stuck then in this cycle of continual rebirth as a deluded human being. Or we can forget about speculating and understand that this teaching is about living a human life as fully awakened. Each moment has the potential to give birth towards awakening, towards fully maturing, or continued delusion. And that's where deep concentration within the framework of the Eightfold Path is concerned with. What's occurring right now? What am I holding in mind? What type of life am I really going to lead now? It's not about, rebirth is not a teaching about something that's going to happen in the far future. It's about what's going to happen in the next moment. And I have, again, I said it 12 times today. I have within me right now the potential to give birth to an awakening moment or to continue my own delusion. And that's where karma and rebirth are tied together. And that's how they fit into the Dhamma.
Mindfulness.
Well, that's the concentration is a skill that is necessary to develop the refined mindfulness of the Dhamma. And the refined mindfulness of the Dhamma is to be mindful of the eight factors of the Eightfold Path.
It is wrong.
It's good to be, well, it's good to be mindful of what's occurring, but the way we do that is through the Eightfold Path, because that ceases the distraction of proliferating an ego self. Is that clear? Great discussion.
So rebirth is the emergence of ego.
Yes.
Right.
Or not. But
right.
That's the
right.
Potential.
So rebirth is the emergence of ego, and dependent origination is that ego depends on, or the emergence of ego, or rebirth, depends on clinging and craving and wrong speech and wrong action and wrong life.
Yes, and if we let go, if we recognize and abandon clinging to an ego personality, we'll cease creating another moment
right.
for the proliferation of anatta, of that which is prone to suffering, and will give rise to what is not prone to confusion and suffering. We'll give rise to a fully mature human being. And a fully mature human being is not concerned about other realms because that fully mature human being is living here. There's no need to project ourselves into other realms and future lives or higher levels of consciousness. The point of awakening is to awaken. What happens when you awaken in the morning? You're there. You're in your life. It could be a deluded life, but you're no longer asleep.
You experience more awakening.
You experience more
all
awakening.
All day long.
Yeah.
And then
or,
the next, we rebirth some more awakening. If you have the intention, it's like everything you said, you can flip it into that the good, you know, the other direction, as opposed to rebirthing an ego, you rebirth an awakening.
Awakening. That's the point. It's the point of karma and rebirth. Karma shows, the understanding of karma is just a word that describes in a way that we can be dispassionate about because we don't have to react to it. This is what's occurring because of your past actions that are moderated by the present moment of your mindfulness. And if your mindfulness isn't inclined towards the Dhamma, it's going to be more reactionary. It won't lead to awakening. But if you experience your karma within the framework of the Eightfold Path, then your karma unfolds towards awakening. And what happens then? And even in the misguided applications, it talks about extinguishing karma. And extinguishing karma is the end of... Well, it's true, but usually the way that's applied is that once you've extinguished karma, now you can live a life in this greater realm. Doesn't add up. But if you look at it within the context of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, what's important is what's occurring. And so my karma is what's occurring right now. And if in this present moment, my mind is well concentrated and mindful of the Eightfold Path, then I'm going to continue to give rise towards awakening. I'm going to, in even more practical terms, I have the potential in each moment to continue a life of lasting peace and happiness, or continued confusion and all the rest of it that comes from an ego personality, the competitiveness and aggressiveness, and the confusion that arises from not understanding who you truly are, or what you truly are. Any questions about that? I think I'm going to stop there. I think that's enough on karma and rebirth. So this week, you'll read the chapter on karma and rebirth, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it a little bit more. And then next week, I'm going to introduce the final chapter in the course on hindrances to practice, which it almost seems like it's an afterthought, but it really is the most important aspect of continuing Dhamma practice, to look at those hindrances. But this week, just keep your focus on karma and rebirth, and we'll talk more about it. Mark?
A question about the reading. I haven't read the chapter yet, but
I do, but it's really what I just said, that we extinguish, there's a human being, the Buddha did not create any additional karma for himself because he was awakened, he understood, he didn't react to things, he didn't put conditions on what was occurring. We can live human lives without creating more karma. Which means that we stay in that state of, we have given birth to a continual state of as an awakened human being. Of course, then you get technical and you get too analytical. Each moment that unfolds is a new birth for us. There's some physics behind this too, practical physics. If you look at the human body changes constantly. There's new cells that die and new cells that are born each and every moment. The Buddha described that 2,500 years ago using the word kalapas. Kalapas describes the process, this underlying energetic process. Kalapas are things, minute particles of energy. This is amazing, the Buddha described this, and they're just starting to come to grips with this now. Minute particles of energy that millions of them blink on, come into existence, and blink off, die, in the blink of an eye. And it's that underlying energy that is manifesting our physical and mental process. You can also look at things, I thought this was fascinating when I first came across it, a giant iron beam. If you look at it close enough with the right microscope, it's just molecules in motion. It's just kalapas. The same thing with us. They say that the human form changes completely every 7 years approximately. Every cell in a human body is different. It takes 7 years for all the cells to regenerate. But over that 7 years, there's not one cell that remains from 7 years ago. In each and every moment, we are a different human being because cells die and cells are born within us. So even looking at it in a practical way, everything is in a process. And we can influence this process or karma unfolding by the present state of our mindfulness. Again, as we develop the Eightfold Path, as we develop deeper concentration, we're affecting what we are going to give birth to. It's all up to us. It's all, we have the control. It does not mean that we have control over worldly causes and conditions, though. We only have control over how we experience them and respond to them. I lost you?
No, you just blew my mind.
What's that?
You guys were just talking about, when you said extinguishing karma, it just, like all this entire time I've been thinking about enlightenment as being this, like, final place that you arrive in, and then you're there, and karma is permanently extinguished. And it's not. It's always being extinguished.
Well,
nothing's permanent.
I used the example of the Buddha awakened that did not create any more karma, but for 45 years, he'd lived the results of his past intentional actions. Think about the moment when the Buddha awakened. That was the result of his past intentional actions, moderated by his present moment mindfulness, and it led to his awakening. Now you can get there's stories in the in even ancient Buddha called the Jataka tales, J-A-T-A-K-A, and these are tales of the Buddha's past lives, as some of them are famous, like the tiger. But other past lives, not just as animals, as human beings. And you can look at them as facts, or you can look at them as fables that tell an important story. And if you look at them as fables that deliver that important story, you realize that it's just a way of unfolding your lives. Mostly when the Buddha talked about past lives, he only said, when in the past, when I was an unawakened bodhisattva, or bodhisattva in modern terms. Bodhisattva is one who has inclined their minds to awaken for the sole purpose of awakening all human beings. Notice when the Buddha said it, in the past, when I was an unawakened bodhisattva. Even if that's the highest goal that anyone can achieve that does not awaken. But once you're awakened, or once you take, you understand that the path to awakening does not include that. That's a preliminary. That's just something that you do. You develop some compassionate understanding before you awaken, is all that that means. So we're laying right now we're laying the foundation for awakening, and the teachings on karma and rebirth is just that. We have the ability, despite any past intentional actions, to give birth to an awakened moment. One of the most important stories that in the Pali Canon is the story of Angulimala, and this is what kind of blows away most of the modern teachings on reincarnation. Most of the teachings on reincarnation say that if you lived an awful life, if you've done terrible things, it's going to take you eons of suffering and some kind of hell to burn through it. Well, just this one story, there's many of these in the Pali Canon, just this one story shows how wrong that is. Angulimala was a bloodthirsty murderer. So much so that he enjoyed killing so much and letting people know that he would cut off the fingers of the people that he killed, and he made a necklace and wore this around so people knew that he was. And he had that reputation during the Buddha's time. And he had 99 of these on his necklace, these bloody fingers.
Good.
What?
I said, I bet he smelled good.
Yeah, he wasn't concerned about his odor either. And so he's walking down a street one day, and the Buddha's coming in the other direction, and Angulimala notices the Buddha. And he sees number 100. He says, this guy's going to be it. And as he got closer to the Buddha, even maintaining this strong intention to make number 100, he saw the countenance and radiance of this awakened human being. And the Buddha understood his intention. And to make a long story short, he explained the Dhamma to Angulimala, and Angulimala awakened on the spot, and he became one of the most important monks of the Buddha Sangha. So it didn't take him lifetimes of wandering around in hell to pay for those 99 murders. What was important is what occurred in that moment. His past karma led him to that moment. He didn't have experiences where he was studying strongly the Dhamma. He didn't have lifetimes of engaging in the Dhamma. He heard the Dhamma, took it to heart, understood it, and awakened. And that changed his karma. He didn't have to pay for all those murders. What was important to Angulimala is he understood the Dhamma and awakened. And that changed everything. If he continued to hang on to his view as a great murderer, He would have continued to do that. He awakened, and it changed the whole experience of his life. That's a good story on karma and rebirth. It's not something that we have to pay for. No matter what kind of, most of us, you know, I don't think anybody here killed 99 people. Most of us have things in our past that we wish we didn't do. We're human beings. Be gentle with ourselves. And understand that this is a simple framework to develop moral and ethical lives that have deep meaning and purpose. They're founded in wisdom, not just something that we should do. And they lead to the goal. They lead to cessation of suffering, cessation of confusion. So that's enough for today. Except, are there any other questions before we sit? So, again, a great class. We'll study, you'll read Karma and Rebirth, and we'll discuss it next week, and we'll have a 20-minute sit. So we have someone who's relatively new, Mike and Michelle. So I'll talk us into Shamatha Vipassana meditation. Again, there's a booklet out there that you can take. There's also a recording of this on my website that you can download and listen to and help you guide yourself. If 20 minutes seems uncomfortable, don't struggle with it. Meditation shouldn't be a struggle. Just come out of the method and then pick it up again when you feel more comfortable with it. So, find your relaxed meditative posture. If you're sitting on a chair, it's best to keep your back straight and your feet flat on the floor. So again, find your relaxed meditative posture, holding your back straight, but not stiff. Your ears aligned with your shoulders and nose aligned with your navel. And gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. Excuse me. And holding yourself very loosely, very gently, very lovingly, allow yourselves to settle into this room, settle onto your seats, settle into your bodies, and settle into your minds. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. Just get a feel for what that's like, to be mindful of your breath in your body. And if you can pick up your breath at the tip of your nose, place your mindfulness there. And while remaining mindful of your breath in your body, notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings, thoughts should be flowing. The purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to not be distracted by our own thoughts. So when you notice that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. I'll repeat that. When you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 20 minutes. Congratulations on completing this week's Dhamma study. Remember to be gentle with yourself and enjoy your study. The most loving action we can take for ourselves and for all beings is to develop the Dhamma and awaken. If you feel that you would like to review any week's study or take longer than 1 week to integrate a lesson before beginning the next week's lesson, please do so. There is a lot to integrate. Continue to integrate your meditation practice into the broader framework of the Eightfold Path and the other supportive direct teachings of the Buddha. Keep in mind that this course develops the foundation for a lifetime of lasting peace and happiness. The continued development of these principles is based on your own continued right effort. Peace.